KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. Spencer Tracy was famous for saying acting was about learning your lines and not bumping into the furniture. But as I think we've all learned by now, acting is a bit more complicated than that. And there's no better evidence of that than in director Christopher Monger's great documentary, Special Thanks to Roy London. That title comes from a credit at the end of every episode of The Larry Sanders Show. And the creator of that show and its star, Larry Sanders, Gary Shandling, is also here. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we should somehow, I wish we could get special thanks to Roy London after this particular interview somehow on the,
I'll just say it. You just gave it to him.
Special thanks to Roy. It's all about Roy. This particular documentary that Chris made is, I've said this before, I mean, I was very close to Roy. I talked to him every day. He influenced all of my work to a degree, really. When he passed away, I thought, I don't even know if I want to keep working. And when I saw a cut that he did, because I didn't see it along the way, I went, oh, my God. I mean, I was sobbing because he's captured what the man was about, what people were getting from him.
Because that sense you get, Chris, for watching everybody talks is that they were hit by lightning in some way or another. And some people are really open to talking about it. And some people, it's sort of shocking as it comes out of them, as they're describing this whole process.
Everybody came to bear witness. I mean, we didn't have to, you know, force anybody or cajole them. They all showed up and... One thing that was very easy for me as an interviewer was they just all wanted to talk. And I think they were all surprised by what came out because it had been 10 years since he died. And some people came having kind of prepared.
Yeah, we should say he died in 1993.
He died in 93. We started filming in 2003. Some people kind of came like they were going to be tested, like what did Roy teach? But as soon as they were there, some kind of rawness took over and they just became very raw. We had a box of tissues next to the chair, and a lot of people laughed. Oh, this is like coming to the shrink. You know, you think I'm going to cry? Everybody cried. Everybody cried, and usually within a few minutes, they just allowed themselves to be very vulnerable about Roy. And as soon as they started talking about him, it became very obvious that they went to somewhere very real.
He had such an interesting life, and... Christopher, one of the things that was so amazing to me about watching this documentary, which has an incredible array of stars, starting with Sharon Stone, who, of course, basically set this whole thing in the rolling to you, is how behavior changed in the way all these people acted, you know? And as we were talking before, clearly he was such a big, forceful guy that it was easier for him to teach maybe than to act.
Well, I never saw him on stage. And people who saw him on stage in the early days with the Open Theater, things like that, said he was stellar. And just commanded the place. I did see him do his classes, and I think that was his arena for acting in a way. And I think that's where Roy got to fulfill himself as a performer. I don't think he was an actor in that way. I think Roy was a natural performer. So that kind of open theater, early kind of 60s avant-garde stuff was much more of a place for him, I think. If you'd seen him in the classes, he was one of the best... you know, live acts I've ever seen. I mean, I would go just to see him. Yeah, it was terrific.
Just the bits that we get to see in the documentary, he really is using the entire space to get people, to prod people in this way, wasn't he?
Absolutely. But I think, you know, there is that weird contrivance about movies where it's, you know, switch on, switch off. And I think what Roy was doing all the time was what he needed. So... it may well have been that his experience in TV and movies, I never spoke to him about it, but I suspect that his own experience may have then been driving what he was teaching other people because he knew what it was like to go there and not be happy, not be enjoying it. So, I mean, Cameron Thorne in the documentary, you know, says that whatever Roy was teaching was what he needed that day as well as what the person he was teaching needed. I mean, you were aware of Roy going through process. It wasn't like he never pretended, I've got it. You know, I've got the whole thing. You know, someone said, who's teaching Roy today? And I said, well, if Roy was alive, he wouldn't be teaching what we're talking about. He would have moved to something else. It was always in flux, always changing, always alive. That's the whole gig.
Garrick, one of the things that fascinates me, we talked about this earlier, is that you were saying that really he changed the way you did stand-up.
Well, I mean, I walked into his class in 85, and I had just started doing stand-up, and to this day influences completely how I operate and prepare as a stand-up. My material is integrated into my body, and I prepared. I then meditate and let it go, let the material go, let my mind be clear, and walk out and see what impulses hit me, which means that I can fail on stage. It means I'm willing to fail because I'm going to be whatever I am in that moment, which I am as I speak to you. So I'm stuttering around looking for the exact way to put this and so forth rather than having it memorized. But it's going to be more human. And then I trust my instinct, and I've done enough preparation for that particular set of comedy that I know what the material is, but I don't know how it's going to come out. And what I've learned over time is half the time it comes out better and half the time it comes out worse. But when it's better, it soars because it's inspired, which I don't take credit for. What I mean is I'm out of the way. I'm not a comedian looking to be liked, to do – there's nothing in my head but
– or a comedian waiting for that one big joke that you know is going to kill.
Right. Now, I will say that I'm professional enough to know that I have a handful of big jokes that I can throw in when I'm in trouble, which is the same thing we do in life. In life, we know what we've got that we're going to pull out if we're in trouble. We've got our things to go to. And so,
one of the funny things Roy used to say in class is to people, somebody say, well, you know, you could act that moment, because in life, sometimes we're acting. When you show up and you're late and you know that you're going to be late and you actually haven't had a problem, you act, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, my car broke down, all the rest of it. We act in life. I mean, we do these kind of like little deceptions sometimes to each other. And he said, so it's okay to act those moments, because those moments actually you wouldn't be free and open.
It gets so ultimately confusing as we theorize it, and it's clear in this wonderful documentary about Roy. But, you know, I also would cast parts in Larry Sanders. So, you know, someone would come in to read a part, and I remember once a woman, an actress walked in who you wouldn't know. She was reading for two scenes. And she walked in, and as soon as she walked in, she was kind of nervous and weird and fidgety and jumpy. And I already thought, that's exactly right. She sat down in the chair. She was perfect. She was uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden, she started to do the scene with whoever was reading with her. And she thought she had to do it right. And she shifted out of that thing, and she started to do it right. And I stopped her, and I said, listen, when you came in the door, you had it. You don't need to do this other thing you're doing because you're not getting to see you. So let's bring it down and start all over. And we actually worked with her the way I learned from Roy, which is, please, you would be nervous. You should be nervous. You would do whoever you are. I want to see you. You're covering you. Now, the passion that I have in say you're covering you, that's the passion Roy has when he sees an actor, a human being, not presenting themselves at a 100% authentic level. It's practically immoral because we're human spirit, human souls, and he wants to make sure that you're showing that.
We always just say that, you know, who you are is more interesting than whatever's been written on the page. If you can bring that and then just do the stuff on the page, it's just such a bonus. I mean, if you just show up, if you just show up as a whole person and, like, do that, you let someone capture that on camera, that's magic.
So if you go off of right what he said just quickly, in Larry Sanders, what had to be really explained and what was the theme of the creative workings of that show was be, actually, I'm saying it now, be. I don't care if these words are right. Change the words. I don't care. And one by one, each actor became comfortable knowing, oh, they could just be. And that's why in that show you can't – it's fairly unpredictable because you, it feels like I can't tell – are they doing lines? Are they ad-libbing? What's going on? Because they were given permission to be.
See, this brings something to mind from, by the way, it's The Treatment. My guest, Christopher Monger, he's the director of the documentary. Special thanks to Roy London, one of Roy's students, Gary Shandling. He's here too. And watching one of the special features in the Larry Sanders box set when you're interviewing Sharon Stone, it's almost like watching, it's like you're preparing for a scene, the way you guys are sitting and talking about the food and everything before you even get going.
Well, you know, Sharon called me after we taped that interview for the – it's not an interview. It's a visit. I don't know what you call it. It's not even – that's not supposed to be on. It's not even supposed to be entertaining. It's like let's get the cameras and just be. And to her credit, she was. So you see it's that's real. That's a real conversation. And she was willing to be talking to me. And she called me up and she said, my God – after she saw it, because we didn't edit really, she said, "My God, you've caught what Roy has been teaching, which is just to be." And I was nervous because I thought she might react like, "Oh, I don't really want to be seen this way," which was so open and vulnerable, and something was happening. And that's the great thing about Sharon is, she's ballsy. And so she said, "That's great. You just captured in that what Roy's teaching."
I guess I find myself wondering, Gary, because so much about stand-up, what we hear, or when comedians do talk, and you were talking before about the HBO award show where Seinfeld gets the award from Chris Albrecht, and you're there on stage with Chris Rock, with Robert Klein, and you guys are all sitting around talking to Jerry Seinfeld. They all talk about a certain kind of rigidity, and you must have sort of come in, having written comedy for a long time before you did stand-up, with that mindset, and you had to be sort of broken out of that a little bit through him, didn't you?
Yes, that's my biggest challenge in life. My biggest challenge artistically is to work out of control. It takes enormous courage not to be in control of what you're feeling and doing. And so as a stand-up, you know, you're there, you've got the mic, you know, there's a certain control that you automatically have. But to allow your inner life to be out of control so that people can feel and see you living, so that the person on stage is a whole human being, not a stand-up comedian, is my approach. And I think I prepare a little differently than my buddies, and we talked about it on that special. And
again, what I was saying before, you can see the surprise in your face as you're saying some of these things on stage.
Right. I had no idea, but at one point, I, as you can imagine, am an observer. And I learned just, you know, so much from Roy. It's indescribable. It affects everything I do. But the fact is, I think Anderson Cooper said to Seinfeld, what was your first Tonight Show like? And he and Jerry said, well, it was just amazing, and it was so special because it's all special to us to be a comic on the Tonight Show. And he had a great set. We did our sets a month apart. And Jerry said, I think probably before I die, the day I'm dying, I'll probably think back to that stand-up set. And that's how important it was to me. And Anderson Cooper said, Gary? And I said, well, mine went well, and my guess is Johnny Carson, the day he died, thought of my set. Now, what's interesting is I couldn't believe that came out of my mouth, and the voice in my head said to me, "Oh, I notice I'm on tonight. I notice I'm on." Just as a quick observance.
We should take a break. We'll come back with more. We're talking about the movie Special Thanks to Roy London. Its director, Christopher Monger, is here, and also Gary Shandling. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. We're talking to the director of the documentary. Special thanks to Roy London, Chris Remonger, also the man who sort of made that phrase kind of well-known to many of us, Gary Shandling, the star of The Larry Sanders Show, is also here. Christopher, I have to ask you, as a director, how did that change you? Because you were talking before about you working with Hugh Grant on The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain, and the way you sort of put that movie together. I'm wondering what kind of influence you felt from Roy in the way you actually staged things and put actors together. Because I'd like to hear your side of this now, having seen so much of that in the movie.
Well, curiously, I think Roy led me back to what I had intuitively done to start with. I started as a painter, and I'd worked a lot in avant-garde theater in Europe in the 70s with a big amount of emphasis on process rather than product. And the whole thing being about, you know, if you take care of the process, the product will take care of itself. I mean, that was our mantra. And I started making these little movies without scripts. My first feature film was made for £10,000. But of course, then as people gave me more money and I made kind of proper films, the whole machinery comes in that shuts down every intuition that you were able to have before. You know, when I was just running around with a camera crew of four people, you go, well, let's not do it here. Let's do it over there. Let's change that line. It's a very freeing thing. Once you get a movie with a proper budget, you know, and Hugh Grant involved, there's a schedule and there's a 2 minutes here and there's a 2-3 minutes there. It's a very problematic thing for someone who thinks about process. And I'd kind of lost it a little bit, I think. So while I knew Roy and was close with him and saw classes, actually it was working on the dock that really drilled it back in. You got to get back to where you were, buddy.
I imagine that for a director of the cast, it must have been an incredibly intimidating process. You talked about actually meeting him and how intimidating that was.
Well, first of all, I was mad at him because Karen Montgomery, who's a producer, and I started living together, and he would call every morning at 6 a.m. You know, I don't have a friend who calls that early in the morning unless they want to get bailed. I mean, you know, it's got to be serious for someone to call at 6.
I was unaware you were living with Karen Montgomery. I was living with Karen Montgomery at the same time. Please continue. Sorry.
So I got the class, and I'm already mad at the guy, and here he is. I have all these kind of European auteur ideas, you know, a writer-director, and here's this guy who's kind of saying, you know, deny the script, kind of, you know, don't worry about the director. I'll teach you how to get around him. That's how I heard it. So I was like, what's this guy about? But at the same time, he was so engaging and full of life that the classes were so much fun to go to. But gradually, I became less nervous about what he was saying and started to take it in.
It requires enormous courage to operate the way Roy is saying. I've had the same experience Christopher has, where I've been fooled into suddenly trying to be result-oriented. I mean, everything that he teaches is also a metaphor for life.
But you were saying you even changed the way you are physically. I mean, as a boxer, it's probably actually sort of changed the way you think in the ring, doesn't it? Because you're in that moment instead of trying to anticipate and throw a jab when you shouldn't throw a jab.
Yeah, I could talk about that all day, and I'd like to hit you once, too. But the fact is
I'm just moving back a little bit.
Well, no one can see, but you're past my reach by a good foot. Yeah. It is exactly the same, which is this. A boxer prepares. There's a general strategy. But, of course, he doesn't really know when he's going to throw those punches if he's in the moment. If he's not in the moment, he's going to get hit. And what my boxing trainer said to me, don't separate the getting hit from hitting. It's all one. And that is what Roy taught. If you start to separate the process instead of being, you're still screwing up, right? I mean, you can't stop and think I got hit, nor can you stop and think I just landed a punch.
It's The Treatment. My guests are the director of Special Thanks to Roy London, the documentary, Chris Remonger, and Gary Shandling. Chris, I guess what I want to ask you, too, is that so much of this movie feels like it's a bunch of witnesses talking about something they've seen that they can't quite describe. You know, it feels almost a weird way to me like Rashomon, because there's not a lot of Roy in it. So we're getting a lot of senses about him from other people.
And contradictory senses.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful sequence at the beginning where my first question, a lot of people came in nervous. My first question was, what did Roy look like? Because I thought everybody knows the answer and that'll just loosen them up. And I wasn't prepared for the fact that every answer was different. But even when people are talking about what he taught them or how he helped them or what they witnessed in the class, even their versions are different because in the end it's what they heard. And we had a screening the other night and several class members were there who were all talking about, oh, now I suddenly get that thing he was talking about. You know, it's taken me this long or now I see it in a different way, because these are things that change with who you are, when you are, where you are, how you are. It's not set, you know.
This all sounds as confusing as life itself, and that's why it's so fascinating who this man was and what people were getting.
It's a terrible danger, though. I'm listening to this. I'm trying to listen to this as a listener at the same time as being here. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible danger to make Roy sound like it was precious or it was psychological. And you know, Roy really wanted his actors to work. Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, I've seen some other coaches where they're quite happy for people to stay in the room and work on the scenes forever. Roy really wanted people to be out in the world doing stuff.
No, the boxing thing is interesting because he basically served as kind of an instigator.
Absolutely.
And Roy wanted you to win.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talking about how do you win? And he breaks it down and he says, what does he say about – he goes back over other generations and he says about
Gary Cooper.
Gary Cooper, thanks. He says he didn't know he was going to win, but you could see that he was struggling. He was going to do whatever he had to do to win, which is probably more interesting than watching someone who knew they were going to win when they came in. Well, this all still sounds like theory, I suppose, but –
Well, he loved Brando because he said, you know, he never seen Brando play a scene where he wasn't trying to win it. You know, and it's that thing where, you know, it's an awful thing for an actor, for instance, to get a scene in a script where they know they're going to lose the scene, you know, physically, emotionally, whatever. And I say, how do you play that, knowing that at the end of it you're going to be defeated? Roy's thing would be you go in there to win.
So if you use your boxing analogy and someone's coming forward, you win by backing up. You don't necessarily need to mix it up with him. You don't have anything to prove. You back up. You move around. You look for the moments. You look for the real moments. You look for the vulnerabilities. You play your fight, your fight. But he did. It was not indulgent.
Well, precious.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this could sound indulgent because we're discussing process. So,
but part of the just thing that people talk to is that it wasn't – because you hear so many acting teachers talk about, you know, getting past your fear. And what's for him as much as anything else, acknowledging that you were afraid.
Well, I think Julie Warner gives the illustration of, you know, being terrified of interviews, absolutely petrified of interviews. I mean, it's the most awful thing an actor has to do is to go to an audition. And she would go – you know, shaking and sweating, and Roy was giving up. Just go in there and make that part of the character. You know, Hank Azaria says in it that, you know, he's very often nervous of working with other actors. You know, you forget that thing of an actor going on a set and maybe, you know, suddenly being confronted with someone who is their idol or you know, they're a fan of. I mean, so it's very odd to suddenly be in a scene doing lines. And you say, I'm terrified of this person. Roy said, be frightened of him. Make that part of the character.
Because he focused on behavior. Is it Gina Davis? Does she say that moment at the end of Thelma and Louise that it was not in the script for when that car flies off the canyon, for her to just feel like this is a complete sense of elation and freedom?
Joy.
And that would be a Roy London move because it's not in the script. You know, how are you going to drive off that cliff? And it's inspired, really.
Well, Roy talked about that script. He would rename scripts when he worked on them with people. And that one, I think he called it intimacy.
Yeah.
That she didn't have it in her life. And the whole drive of the story was to actually achieve intimacy. And intimacy is she gets it at that last moment going off the cliff. But even that thing where, you know, he'd take a script, rename it, rework it, reinvent it for people. I mean, he worked line by line.
He understood human behavior so well. I would adjust the writing on Larry Sanders, too, because I had the option and opportunity to work with Roy during the week, and we'd go, oh, that's not what somebody would do. It's a little awkward for me to talk about Thelma and Louise because I had originally read for the Thelma part.
If only you put your arms out, you'd have it today.
Yeah, I didn't.
You'd be an Oscar winner now. But let me ask you this.
Thank you.
I'll ask you this, and I have one last question for you too, Christopher. But for you, Gary, what was it like being directed by him? Because that character is so much about finding a way to deal with his own fear. And I just wonder what he gave you to sort of use.
If you could see one of my scripts, how many notes there are of, people would say, how close is Gary to Larry? If you saw the notes, I'm not even playing what's in the script. You know, I was playing stuff I was going through in my life that week because I would work with Roy all the time. So that's how I brought reality to that character. When he first started directing, he was taking a little too much time because he's so into the scenes and so into making everyone work at their potential. And he's so full of ideas how to free them that I had to walk over to him once during the week during a rehearsal and said, Roy, we got to finish by Friday. We got to shoot this thing on Friday. He was so bright and he adjusted immediately.
What's it like for you seeing it now? Because what you guys have both been talking about is how much for him life was a part of over this kind of, not only just life, but teaching was part of this ongoing thing. And to have to bring closure to this documentary about this man whose life was so anti-closure, what's it like for you to see it now?
What's nice now is when I screen it, I don't watch it, but then I get the reactions of people. And each time I get a new Roy story, I can always tell a Roy student because they come up to me weeping afterwards.
If I may... we've discussed the fact that Roy died in 93. Now, what's fascinating, Elvis, and see how it ties in, is there in this piece at the end, as he's dying, Roy is saying to his friends, how do I bring closure to this story? It's a metaphor for he was still in the moment. Now, there's two other things I'm going to say that are difficult for me. He was this kind of man. He said to me... I have so many students calling me. This would be in the last couple of weeks before he died, calling me, wanting to see me. And I can't. And he said, because I have nothing to give them. I have nothing to give them. So even at the end, he was thinking about giving and what he could do. And also, I think that the closure of that story is when he says it's all about love, which sounds trite as we sit here, but when you see people, and I heard him say it, it was so real and so ahead of his time.
I think the notion of closure is actually antithetical to the notion of process.
Mm-hmm.
when you're in process, you get product, but the product isn't the closure. The product is just product. It's just detritus that one sheds along the way. So this, I don't mean to demean it or any work I've done, but the work we do eventually is our kind of detritus, if you like, and other people can see it, and that's great. But there is no closure.
I'm afraid it has to be because we're out of time. Well, you guys are welcome to come back here anytime and talk about anything you want. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
My guests are Christopher Monga, the director of Special Thanks to Roy London, also Gary Shandling. Our technical director is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey, the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.